Hashtag Stop Adani has put a big hole in the coal mining ambitions of Indian resource giant Adani. But they seem unfazed and continue their plans to open a giant mine in northern Queensland, with no real opposition from either state or federal governments. Former journalist and professor of politics Quentin Beresford has traced the Adani saga in his book Adani and the War Over Coal. I asked him why the Adani project continues to hang on and what's in it for Australia.
Nothing wrong with big resource projects in principle, but where they lack a social licence to operate, then there will be significant blowback. We've seen that over forests in Tasmania and North Queensland. We saw it over the attempts to industrialise the Kimberley Coast recently in Western Australia. We've seen it in a number of states which have forced governments to stop fracking. So there is a concern out there, a deep concern among people, that corporations don't just have a free ride to the nation's resource if there are deep environmental values at stake that the community takes seriously.
Underlying all this is more than jobs. The figures on jobs for Adani, for example, have been revised right down, and yet politicians continue to support it. At the bottom of it, really, in your book, as you point out, is it's what you call the great coal rush of this century, but also the great coal wars. Can you explain a little bit what you mean by that?
Well, the great coal rush is really, really an emerging tragedy for the planet, because from the late 90s, early 2000s, Asian countries in particular ramped up their demand for coal. And that was as a result of a number of circumstances. India's economy really started to take off as it became liberalised. China's economy continued to grow rapidly, and the tsunami in Japan forced Japan to turn away from nuclear power and adopted increased coal-fired power generation. So for these combination of reasons, there was this unseemly rush to find the world's last remaining great coal deposits. And, of course, the biggest of these happened to be in central Queensland in the Galilee Basin. The fact of the matter is, though, that we're being told by scientists and reputable energy agencies around the world that the world's remaining fossil fuel deposits need to be left in the ground. And here's Australia, as the world's largest exporter of coal, really, I think, turning its back on its international responsibility to lead the world in transit out of coal.
So why do you have those two things happening at once, though? I mean, you kind of explain why coal was suddenly seen as so valuable, but at the same time, the growing awareness of climate change, that has really blossomed in this century.
Yes. The tragedy, the double tragedy, I think, is there was a gap. There was a gap in international climate politics. And so really what we've seen here is the failure of Kyoto to create a binding international-based agreement, and then the failure of the Copenhagen climate talks. And so there was this gap in international cooperation and agreement on climate change, and countries looked at their national self-interest, and their national self-interest told them that coal remained, in their minds, the cheapest baseload fuel, even though renewables were ramping up around the world. They took that calculation, and we're going to pay the price for it unless we can wind back, and wind back urgently.
Now, the whole of this very long protracted public Adani campaign has been a lot about PR. There's been some fascinating aspects to it. Now, we'll start with Adani himself, who had to remake his own image in India. Tell me a bit about that campaign.
Well, he's such a scandal-plagued corporation in India. The Adani Group has a very controversial reputation for poor environmental practice. Some might allege environmental vandalism. The book traces 8 or 9 cases where Adani has run foul of authorities on both environmental and financial grounds. He decided to undertake a corporate PR image, and he got a British company in to help him do that, and they gave him all sorts of advice. But at the end of the day, the advice amounted to a little more than slogans, a little more than a green wash over of Adani's record. And so effectively, that public relations campaign really fell flat, and the scandals for Adani kept piling up in India.
So how has he managed to charm Australian politicians?
Well, I think this is just one of the totally scandalous aspects of this whole saga, is that both Queensland government and both the federal Labor and Liberal governments have failed to do due diligence on Adani. They're just not interested. They've done no sustained background checks on his Indian dubious reputation. And a lot of that information is out on the public record if they bothered to find it, but they're just disinterested in it. So, you know, Australian governments, I think, have failed to exercise the national interest. Backing Adani is backing a highly leveraged corporation that can't of itself raise the money for this project, that is highly leveraged and may not in time be able to carry out this project even if it was given it.
Former journalist and professor of politics Quentin Beresford, author of Adani and the War Over Coal.